And here comes fucking Parker. Walking down 9 miles, swinging the head by the hair in one hand, and his hamburger in the other, and he's still eating it! Then, of course, needless to say, everybody just lost their cookies.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of The Movie Mug, a film and a beverage all within the 20 minutes. My name's Steve Piggott and this is episode three of this particular week. I'm doing 5 podcasts this week to celebrate my show going onto iTunes. It's an arbitrary celebration, but what the hell, I've got very little else to do at the moment. So I'm watching films, enjoying a drink and having a little review and hopefully bringing you something that you've maybe never even heard of before. All of these films are on VHS. That's how I'm starting these things off, because I found them all up in my loft. They've all been sitting there at least 5 years unwatched, and possibly a lot longer, completely unwatched. This one's probably knocking on for around about 10 to 15 years I haven't seen this, and the tape is in, trust me, pretty bad condition. The spools squeak and squeal as they're going around, the tape's a little bit worn, the picture jumps all over the place. I mean, it was not a particularly great rendition in the first place, but it's one that I'm loathe to get rid of, because it's a little masterpiece of a film in its full uncut glory. Now, I have checked on Play.com and Amazon. You can get this film quite easily, but it's a cut version. I've got around about 5 minutes more of nastiness kept into this version that I managed to get hold of many, many moons ago. So I'm rather reluctant to let go of this particular version at the time. But anyway, before we get to the film, what I like to do is I like to have a drink while I'm watching the film and kick back, enjoy it, Take on the drink, and tell you what the particular mug is for this particular movie. And this particular mug is one that's near and dear to my heart. I'm a bit of a closet gleek, yes, I'm afraid so. Probably not a popular choice, but no doubt, you know, the world would be a boring place if we were all the same. But I like Glee. I like it. It's great. A few show tunes, doesn't go amiss. I think they're quite good. So it's a Glee mug, and in it we've got options: Belgian chocolate with a hint of mint. Lovely. Bit of class there. Bit of class in a glass to go with what is realistically a stalker slasher pick from 1989. And it's called Intruder. Now, it's called Intruder, but it actually has 2 other titles. It goes by the name of Intruder in the UK, but it's all around the world. Films have different titles all over the place. So it's also known as The Night Crew, and it's also known as The Night Crew : The Final Checkout. So, you know, it depends on where you are in the world listening to this. If anybody is listening to this, that you'd know this film, or you may be able to get a hold of this film. But I know it as Intruder. Now, interestingly enough, I first saw this film a long, long time ago, and it's a 22-year-old film now anyway. And I mentioned in an earlier podcast about the fact that I came across Capricorn 1, quality film, in a series of showings on TV by a TV series called Movie Drone by Alex Cox, where he would introduce introduce a film and talk about it a little bit and go, like, you know, this is the reason why it's a classic, this is the reason why we're showing it, and give a bit of a background. You know, this is long before DVD, bonus extras, special features, you know, took over the need for all of that. So, very, very similar to that, there used to be a show back, I think it was around about 87, 88, 89. This film, obviously, an 89 picture, so it would have been around about that kind of time, because it shows him, in this case, Jonathan Ross, on set while they're making this particular film, which is where I first heard about it. And it's a program called The Incredibly Strange Film Show, which I absolutely loved. You saw, 87, 88, 89, I'd have been 15, 16, 17 at the time. And I adored this film, this TV show. It was a Channel 4 program. It was like every Friday or something, every Thursday night, I can't remember for sure. And if you look on YouTube, you can actually see almost every single one of these episodes on YouTube. They're usually cut up into 2 or 3 or 4 parts, because it's like an hour long. But what he would do is he would go to Hollywood, go to the Far East, stuff, places like that, and he would showcase sort of obscure, sort of fringe directors, you know, people like Russ Meyer, Fred Olen Ray, George Romero, Stuart Gordon, he did Herschel Gordon Lewis, he did Ed Wood, and he did Sam Raimi. Sam Raimi, of course, of Evil Dead fame, and now Spider-Man fame, but at the time it was Evil Dead fame. So he did a show on Sam Raimi, and right at the beginning of the show, I remember it quite clearly, and so you can watch it if you go to YouTube, he interviews Sam, and he's on set of his new film, but but it's not a film he's directing. It's a film that he is actually not starring in, but he's actually in, he's acting in. And it was called, I think on the program it was actually called Night Crew, and then it got changed to Intruder because they didn't believe the Night Crew, the title had a high enough sellability factor to it, so it was entitled Intruder instead. So that's where I first saw this film, and I really urge you, if you've got any interest in films whatsoever, check out the Incredibly Strange Film Show on YouTube. It's very old now, you know, it's 25 years old, but it showcases some fantastic film directors at their peak when they're making some quality, and it would mostly be gore or exploitation films. Like I said, these were obscure and fringe directors, so you wouldn't focus on, I mean, you know, there wasn't one about Spielberg or Scorsese, but, you know, George Romero, he would do one because obviously Night of the Living Dead and he wanted to see what he was doing. I think his one was centred around Monkey Shines, which I think was sort of around that sort of time, 1990. But so that's where I first found out about Intruder, and I got a hold of it a couple of years later on a slightly dodgy cassette, which is the one I've still got, which, like I say, it is fully uncut, and it's got all of the gore and all of the beheadings and slicings and dicings that you can't get anymore. So it's a bit of a find, and it's a bit of a great film to watch. So it's like I say, Sam Raimi's in it, but he hasn't really got anything more to do with it. Well, he hasn't got anything more to do with it other than the fact that he is playing a part in it, but there is definitely the Sam Raimi touch in various aspects of it. And it's probably not quite so much directly Sam Raimi. The director of this particular film, Scott Spiegel, who also co-wrote it, is basically one of Raimi's sort of like friends he grew up with in school, along with Bruce Campbell. So these three guys, Campbell, Raimi, and Spiegel, basically all grew up together and all got into the film business together. But obviously Raimi became, you know, quite a huge sort of like, you know, sort of concern. Bruce Campbell's got that kind of cult thing going on. Everyone knows who he is. This guy, Spiegel, really only did a few bits and pieces. He does appear in almost every one of Raimi's films, like as a walk-on or as a bit part or whatever. This was his directorial debut in terms of a feature. He'd done a couple of other shorts. And he went on to do... He directed the first sequel to From Dusk Till Dawn, From Dusk Till Dawn 2, which, you know, is not particularly great. And interestingly enough, when I was looking through IMDb, he is actually the director of Hostel 3. Now, I didn't even know there was a Hostel 3. Obviously, the first two Hostels were quite big films, directed and written by Eli Roth, but he obviously wants nothing to do with the third one, and I think this one is a bit stuck in the mire. I think it was filmed a while ago. It's due to be released this year, but there's no date on it. There's very little information. There's no screenshots. There's no, you know, sort of still photography from the film. It's a bit off the grid a little bit, and it's a bit suspect as to what exactly is happening with this. But Hostel 3, hey, there you go. It's due out this year, directed by Scott Spiegel. As like I say, he also appears in most of Raimi's films, so if you look him up on IMDb, you can see that he'd sort of walk on parts in Spider-Man and Darkman and stuff like that. So the film the cast is a bit eclectic, mostly, you know, unknowns. Obviously Sam Raimi, like I said, he's just a bit part, plays a guy called Randy. And we'll know his brother's in it, Ted Raimi, and everybody, most people who know films know about Ted Raimi. He appears in a lot of his brother's works. There's a lot of other stuff as well. Joxer in Xena. That's about as famous as he really got, really. But he's in the Spider-Mans. He's in all sorts of bits and pieces. Elizabeth Cox is really the star. She plays Jennifer, and to be honest with you, she's been in fuck all else. You know, she's kind of, I think she retired from acting about 20 years ago, but she's mainly the star, Jennifer. Renee Estevez is in it, and now she plays Linda. She's part of the Sheen clan. She's their little sister. She hasn't really done a great deal more. West Wing's probably about the as most high profile as she's got. Dan Hicks is in it. He plays Bill. He's an old friend of Raimi again. Again, he's in most of the films. He played quite a large part in Evil Dead 2. Bruce Campbell is in it, but it's really a very, very short cameo. Interestingly enough, he gets top billing on the DVD that you can buy now. If you go to if you go to play.com or Amazon and you look this film up, it shows him as having top billing. Literally, isn't it 30 seconds? It's amazing. Yeah, he's in it right at the end. So I don't know why he gets top billing. Well, he gets top billing because he's the only person in it that anybody knows. Lawrence Bender is in it as well, and he produced the film. And Lawrence Bender is obviously really, really famous for his partnership with Quentin Tarantino. He won an Oscar for Pulp Fiction, Palm d'Or, stuff like that, you know, so he's quite famous for that. But he also has a really, really small role in this right at the end, playing a cop along with Bruce Campbell. And that's about it, really, for the cast. There are others that are in the night crew in the in this film, but they're really of no consequence to the film and to any subsequent films they've made in. So realistically, that's the main cast. So what's it about? Well, it's a stalker slasher pick. It's set in a supermarket, fictional supermarket, and the supermarket's closing up for the end of the night. And there's you see a couple, Jennifer, she's the cashier, she's the lead, and Craig, he's so sort of like boyfriend-ish. Bit of a low-life sort of character wearing, you know, sort of typical greaser wearing the black jacket. Looks like he should have been in Greece, to be fair. Bit of a low-life. They're arguing and fighting in the store that she works in. Yeah, typical things, you know, the displays get smashed up, people get hit around. The managers come out, they get involved, they start weighing in and kick him in. And he disappears into the supermarket. They try and find him, and he's obviously a bad seed. And so there's around about sort of 8 or 9 of these guys trying to hunt him down, and that sort of sets up the sort of environment that they're in, you know, shows that the supermarket, for whatever reason, is not particularly well lit. It's probably a budgetary thing. So, you know, the fact it's at night anyway, but for whatever reason, there's no strip lights and whatever to a lesser or greater degree. A lot of the back areas are poorly lit, and it just shows those areas, and they're going around and trying to find him and opening doors, and it's all a bit creepy, and it kind of sets everything up. It's what you'd expect. He eventually comes out, and there's another little bit of a scuffle when they call the police. They chuck him out onto the street. The managers then have a powwow with the team that are there, telling them that basically they drop a bombshell saying that the store's closing down, they need to sell up, and basically everyone's out of a job. So they need to stay the night and reprice everything half price because they're going to have a big sale in the morning and, you know, basically sell up and get out, which obviously puts a bit of a damper on the evening, but means they've got to stay there, hence the night crew. So they basically go on about their jobs, repricing things down, restocking, doing stuff like they would normally do, probably, you know, some other bits and pieces as well. But things start to go a little bit awry when employees start to get bumped off in more inventive and interesting ways. That's about it, really. that's about the scope of the film, is that it's basically then who's going to get picked off next. You know, kind of like a haunted house kind of feature. But that's where the fun starts, because there's the camera creeping around the outside of the supermarket. There's that kind of, you know, Evil Dead style as the murderer preys on people. You know, the camera's moving in and out. You're not quite sure who it is and who it isn't. You know, there's a lot of misdirection in the film. You're meant to think that it's the boyfriend, and maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but I'm not saying. But you're meant to think that. The boyfriend, Craig, has been in prison recently, and that gets sort of like telegraphed a little bit. And, you know, he's calling up the supermarket and he's saying, you know, sort of like, I'm going to get you when you get out kind of stuff. And you turn around and the two girls are talking, and in the background, he appears, you know, through one of the windows. And then when they look, he's gone. You know, you get that kind of feeling. There's a lot of that cliches and stuff that you expect and love, you know, and it's just tons of fun at the same time. The telegraphing of various things is set up right away throughout the film, and it's great fun to try and second guess what they're going to do with all of these bits and pieces, like, you know, back house equipment, like lifts and crushers and paper punches and the chicken slicing machine, which is brilliant. You know, all these sort of ham-fisted stereotypes of stalker slasher films are all in there, and they're all telegraphed, they're all shown quite early on in the film, and they all get used at some point, especially in the uncut version anyway. So all the cliches are there to be had. I mean, even the dead guy, you know, the bad guy at the end, who gets, I'm not giving away too much of the film, who says, you know, he gets killed, as you'd expect, but he has to be killed again and again and again. He keeps coming back. So all of those cliches that you expect are there, and it's great fun. It's fantastic fun to watch. It's also got really, really good dialogue as well. Interestingly enough, Sam Raimi didn't direct this film, but he obviously had quite a lot of input into it, into the way things are done, and the fact that Spiegel, the actual director, grew up with Raimi. So there's a lot of, you know, they had a huge bag of tricks to their disposal. Bugger all money, it was a really low budget film, and I guess they made up with that with their inventiveness as Sam Raimi did on Evil Dead, and to a lesser greater degree Evil Dead 2, made up for the lack of budget with huge inventiveness, which got him noticed by Hollywood. So this is a very, very similar feel to it. And there's all sorts of little bits and pieces that they use. You know, there's fantastic jump cuts, sort of a carving knife coming down on one of the first victims, you know, sort of like all jumps to a watermelon being sliced in two, which is really well done. There's right at the beginning, there's a camera put into a shopping cart. So instead of a dolly, he's been moved around on a shopping cart. You can see the bars of the shopping cart in front, but it's really well done, you know, and it sort of like saves money. So, right, we'll just dump it in the shopping cart and move it around, and that way we get that panning shot. There's a view from inside of a phone. Somebody's picking up a phone. Renny Estevez picks up the phone, and you get the view from up on the inside of the phone, old style phone with a dialer, all cut out, kind of like a mask as such. You know what you expect to get a mask these days on Photoshop. So you can only see her through the holes of the dialer and the bit in the middle, and you know, stuff like that. There's the bottom of a glass, you know, that they shoot through, and actually the glass is used particularly well. To good effect, because they don't want to tell you who the bad guy is. You say there's a lot of misdirection in the film, but the manager's death scene gets obscured by him putting a bottle in front of the camera, so you can see that he's being killed, but you can't see who his assailant is, and it's beautifully done. Lots and lots of, I mean, it's totally Raimi. There's quite a lot of Coen brothers kind of sort of seeping in there as well, because obviously in between Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2, Raimi did Crime Wave, which was partly the Coen brothers were involved. I think they wrote it, if I remember rightly. So there's a lot of that kind of style in there. Lots of inventiveness. Really, really good fun. Really, really great. That's so fun dialogue as well. Really, really good dialogue. Really smart dialogue. They use a story in it, which was the bit at the beginning of the podcast, which is about, you know, the guy carrying a decapitated head in one hand and eating a sandwich in the other, which, mentioning the Coen brothers, is used in Raising Arizona as well. Only in this film, you actually get to see that sequence acted out with a real decapitated, fake decapitated head, which is absolutely fantastic. And that actually is that there's a superb line. Really, really, I really love this line. It follows shortly afterwards, where it's the bad guy. I'm not going to say who it is, but the bad guy is saying, going after Jennifer, the girl who's doing the sequence too. He's got this head in one hand and a sandwich in the other. And he says to her, he goes, "You're playing hard to get rid of." Brilliant, fantastic, I love it, really, really good. So lots of fun. This is a really, really good, great film to watch. It's nothing that you wouldn't expect. Every cliche, every old sort of like trick in the book is thrown at this film, but it's done with such style and verve. And it is really, really well beautifully done for the fact that they only had $100,000 to their name. So it's very, very similar to like an Evil Dead kind of style of film. In fact, I think it was the Evil Dead budget was like a fraction of this comparatively. So it's a really, really good film. I really, really enjoyed this film. I really, really recommend it. But obviously, I really, really recommend the uncut version, which is going to be pretty difficult for a lot of people to get hold of, because I've never seen the cut version, but some of the gore in this film is really well done. It's KMB, Greg Nicotero, you know, who's famous for over-the-top effects and all that, and some of the scenes, so without giving too much away, like people's heads being crushed and sliced in two and whatever, it, some really, really good, nice gore. The biggest problem, the fact is, because it's such a dark film, and again, I don't know why it had to be so dark. Maybe that was to sort of like disguise some of the sort of like, you know, sort of poorer effects or whatever, and you have to make it, yeah, I guess it adds to the tension as well. But these days they would have it full lit, you know, so you can see everything. So I guess that's where potentially, you know, speaking as I do about remaking the film, I'd rather this film wasn't remade, to be fair. I don't think they could add much to the stalker slasher aspect of it. You know, couldn't really do a great deal much more than they has been done many, many times over. But would be nice to see an over-the-top version of this, you know, with all the gore, the same ideas of gore, because I haven't really seen much similar in other films done like this way, you know, with supermarket implements, shall we say. But really, really good film. Intruder, or The Night Crew as it's known, 1989. Really worth getting hold of. And that's today's Movie Mark.